Good morning. Good morning. Just catching up with the mayor of New Bedford, John Mitchell. Mayor, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Chris?
Not bad. Not bad. Nice day out there. We had another loss for the community, Bruce Oliveira. You worked closely with Bruce. He's a friend of yours. We all, I think, respected Bruce tremendously. Talk about Bruce.
Yeah, it was quite shocking to me. His wife, Pam, called me very early in the morning and to let me know the news, and I was pretty stunned by it, and because he was so vital and so active, and even though he had gone through a pretty serious bout with both pancreatic and renal cancer at the same time the year and a half previously, he began some really good treatment and was out of the woods for that. Earlier in the week, he had a fainting spell, had gone to the hospital, but was back at the school committee on Monday night and sitting next to me. And then Thursday morning, I got that call. I got to tell you, it was a shock, but it's, you know, to obviously to lose a friend, but it's a big deal for the city.
Yes.
I did a post on Facebook on about him as a tribute to him last week. And what I said was, I think it's hard to overstate his impact on the city.
Right.
Bruce, you know, you read the headline is school committee member dies suddenly. And that's all true, but he was a lot more than that. He was he ably served on the school committee. He provided a whole lot of value in many dimensions. He was the head of the finance committee, the finance and building committee, and brought a level of expertise that, frankly, the rest of us on the school committee don't have.
Right,
To both of those areas of responsibility, was instrumental. I didn't have to worry about the finances of the school department, knowing that he was shepherding them. The same is true with the building construction projects. There's been more constructed, more rehabs of school building, more rehabilitation of school buildings in the last few years than in decades in the city. And we benefited from getting an influx of federal money, which we used, I think, very very wisely. And he oversaw so much of that. So it ranges from new athletic facilities to new things as mundane as HVAC systems and floors and doors and all kinds of other stuff. And so he was great at that. But and of course, he served on the Housing Authority for many years, for decades, really. And it brought a lot of credibility and stability to that organization. But he belonged to so many important groups, not just belonged, but led them. Right. So if you read obituaries of people who join X, Y, and Z clubs, and that's not uncommon. But what was uncommon about Bruce is just the level of responsibility and impact he had in the ones that he was part of over the years. So they range from the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick, where he was the treasurer for many years, as well as the president twice. They usually don't do presidents twice in that organization, but they kept pulling him in because he was so reliable. The New Bedford Port Society got pulled into that and was instrumental, along with Fred Toomey, in bringing the Siemens Bethel back to life. That building was about to fall apart, and that's arguably the most famous building in the city.
Right.
So that was huge. And then you go beyond that to things like the New Bedford Gridiron Club, when his son Kevin played at New Bedford High. He was part of that. And then after Kevin graduated, he was still with it, contributing Wailing City Youth Baseball. He was a baseball coach for 30 years in the North End. So he was the treasurer at Volk, on the Volk board. He was did a lot for New Bedford High Athletics. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I mean, he really was in the thick of a whole lot, and lots of political campaigns too. He was certainly hugely helpful to me over the years in that way. So you might say, well, how would you sum all that up? I'd sum it all up that it was just somebody you could count on.
Yes.
And that's saying a lot. it's somebody you can count on, and he was treated everybody respectfully. Everybody, regardless of background, got along with him, and he got along with them. And I think the reason was he was honest, he was decent, and he was a good friend. He was loyal, and you know, he didn't hold grudges. Was just an all around decent person. If you ask me, and I mentioned this in my tribute to him. He had more friends than anybody in the city.
Yes.
He's hands down.
Yes.
And so, you know, his wake is Thursday night. I'm sure it'll be a massive wake at Saunders Dwyer, and then his funeral's on Friday at Holy Name. And I'm sure that'll be well attended as well. But he's it's really too bad. But he set such a great example.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, when people go, sometimes you think, geez, maybe I didn't appreciate him as much as I should have.
Sure.
But, I like to think that I did appreciate Bruce, but as I sort of reflect back on all of his contributions, it is impressive. And he'll have a lasting legacy in the city.
I agree with you, Mayor. He was a resource for me. And whenever I'd hear different things, as we always do in the media, and if it was something crazy, I would reach out to Bruce, say, "Hey, I'm not going to go to the air. This, can you check this out?" Type of thing, you know. Just tell me this isn't really happening, right? And he saved me a lot of, you know, going off on stuff that wasn't true. And in fact, talking about the old colony thing, build the new building. Someone on the city council recommended, said, "Hey, why don't you reach out to Bruce? He knows all about that stuff." I never got a chance to. The votes today. No, he'll be really missed. He was a really good guy.
Yeah, he was a really good guy, and I feel obviously badly for his, you know, his wife Pam and his his kids Karen and Kevin, but his grandson Liam. But it just happened. Just kind of a freak thing, and it is a reminder that relationships matter an awful lot.
Yes,
and he was somebody who understood that well, and worked hard to maintain them, and so look, it's hard to, I don't want to say replace somebody, I don't want to talk in those terms,
right?
It's just he should be lauded for his own the good life that he led, but you know, practically speaking, the city's doesn't exactly have another Bruce Oliveira sitting
right
on the bench.
Right. No, I agree with you, Mayor, and it's people have got to step up, because he really led by example. Mayor, we have other things going on here in the city. The downtown's newest restaurant, Blast from the Past, owner Steve Silverstein has kept the name of the National Club, the old fishing bar, but turned it into a really modern Mexican restaurant. I know a number of people that have gone now with a soft opening. I'm sure you have as well.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you think?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. The food was good. Might have had a margarita. That was good.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. The food was great. And yeah, that margarita was great. But what's really striking is you walk in the door. I toured it when he was starting to do the demo. I walked through when the apartment building was pretty much done, but the restaurant hadn't been done, right? So just to remind people that the whole block, nearly the whole block going up Commercial Street, which is on the back side of Union, right?
Yep.
It's one on the other side, the one with like the cul-de-sac at the bottom. That's all become an apartment building. It's owned by the LaFrance family, and so they leased what had been the National Club to Steve to turn into the Mexican restaurant. And so the apartment building was done about a year ago. So when I went in there, I took a look at what had been the National Club. It was all gutted out.
Right.
But I remember the former National Club, as a lot of people do.
And yes.
I can attest, what's there now doesn't look like anything like the National Club.
Is it?
It's beautiful. You walk in. What's really neat is there's lots of art, and it's kind of like you feel like you're in New York because of this, the level of finish on really everything. the artwork, the right down to the tables and the chairs and everything. It just looks so cool, and all throughout. So you walk in to the main, from Union Street into the main room, which isn't all that big. You think, oh, this whole thing. This isn't the whole thing, right? And of course not. You go walk toward the back, walk to your left, and walk, you know, along JFK 18, and you look out, and there's seating all that faces out to the waterfront, and then you continue on. There's yet another room in the back, and then eventually there's going to be outdoor seating as well when the weather's warm. So
sure.
So lots of seating there, big place. Not the biggest kitchen. They really just like shoehorned everything in there.
Okay.
But they did it really well. They're going to do very well with it, which is great. And I think it's, you know, I see the work that Steve has done, and it's in many ways, you know, he's done well by it because he knows what he's doing. He's been in the restaurant business for a while, and of course started the Not Your Average Joe's chain of restaurants, which launched from here and became a big thing. But he, his investments in the city have made the city certainly more inviting. A lot of people come in to go to his restaurants. A lot of people here stay here, and they don't go out to like the chain restaurants out, you know, along Route 6 and stuff inside the city. They stay downtown, which is great. But I think overall with his investments, one after another, Cisco, Black Whale, Candela Cucina, Cultivator Shoals, all this stuff, and more. He's invested in other things in the city. Is really a vote of confidence in the city.
I agree.
Direction of the city.
I agree.
Yeah. So, and I think he would tell you that. In fact, you should probably have him on at some point.
Yeah, I had him on when we were doing the question five. He came in with Jay Lanigan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just saw him the other night because I was at Carmine's, no, what's it called now?
Candela Cucina.
Candela Cucina, yeah. I was down there. I've been there a couple
former
times.
Former Candleworks,
yeah. And I saw him, had a long conversation with Steve. I will get him in.
You should have him on just to talk about it, because I think a lot of people would be interested in how his approach, all that he's done, and like why his restaurants are so successful. I've had this discussion with him before, but what's interesting is that, yeah, I think a lot of people go into the restaurant business because they've been told they're good cooks.
Right.
cook a yes, meat beef yes. stew or whatever, and they say, right, I can run a restaurant, right? And there's more to it than that. There's more to it than just making good food. And we've seen restaurants over the years in the city that have served up good food, but they haven't stayed in business. And you ask, well, why? Because there is a lot more to it. And I'm not going to do it justice, but you know, it has everything to do with the turnover of tables and the consistency and things like parking and all. So how you treat
employees. He does an excellent job. He has employees that have been with him for like 30 years.
He has a guy named Jamie Strabino who's been with him for a long time and has opened up lots of restaurants. Jamie's a good guy. He lives here in Fairhaven, but Jamie was the manager of the Hard Rock Cafe in New York when he was 25, the flagship Hard Rock, right? There was that one and the one in London before all the other ones. And he was 25 years old and was managing that place. So he's been in the business for a long time, and he's opened up a lot of Steve's restaurants, including all the ones here in the New Bedford area. So, but what they'll tell you is that there's a way they do it, and there's a different concept for each one, so they're not cannibalizing the market for existing restaurants. But they have a sense of, they have a sort of intuitive sense of the market, and they're good managers, and they understand how these things are financed. So I think I would just say, hey, bring them on and talk to him. I think it would be a good show.
Yeah, no, Steve's great. May I tell you what we'll do? We'll take a break, and then we'll come back. We got about a 5-minute break. We have the mayor of New Bedford here. It's on a Tuesday. We like to switch it up. That way you guys don't know what we're doing, and it helps.
We're going to keep everybody on their toes.
Yes, keep everybody on their toes. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This portion of programming on WBSM is brought to you by Dee's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, where you can get 2 hot dogs, soda, and a bag of chips for only $5.
South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
Welcome back to the program. That's Firestarter, in case you didn't know, off the mayor's playlist. Mayor, what inspired you with that? You're not a secret pyromaniac, are you?
You know what? So sometimes I'll hear a song and I'll say, you know what? We should add that to the mayor's playlist.
Yes.
So it was, I was watching, what's the new streaming show? Mobland? Have you seen that at all?
I haven't seen it, but I heard about it, yeah.
Tom Clancy, Tom Hardy. It's pretty good, but that was a song that came out. I said, that's a song for
the
Wednesday.
Mayor's playlist.
Yeah.
And of course, Taylor Cormier will be pressing those discs and selling them in the back, selling them out the back door here. Mayor, we had what for me was kind of heartbreaking news, but I'll get over it. The Cape Air flights to Boston abruptly ended during the shutdown. They may have had something to do with it. But what do you know about that, Mayor, and your thoughts?
Yeah, so what? I think the proximate cause was the government shutdown. They had to cancel flights as a result of the FAA order to reduce flights. This was a couple of weeks back, and they reduced those flights. And they're now that the shutdown is done, they're not coming back. So I say that was the precipitating event, but more generally they just weren't seeing enough passengers.
Yeah.
And so this has happened before when this happens with new routes. It's mm-hmm. just they'll give them a shot to market it for a while. They marketed it here on BSM, and if it doesn't pan out, they pull the plug. So I say commercial air carriers,
right,
do that. And so it's not unique to Cape Air. So, you know, I talked to their CEO about it, and I said, look, you know, I'm not going to tell you. This might be offer people some insight in these,
sure,
kinds of conversations I have with business officials, right? We always try to make the case to do business in New Bedford, but I'm not going to tell a business, like, look, I'm not going to be so unrealistic to say, like, if you're not making a profit, you,
right,
need to stay in business here, right? I wouldn't,
right,
say that to anybody.
Right.
So I said, what we want to do is just make sure that, you know, we're continuing to work with you to develop routes. Mm-hmm. They fly into other airports that were, I actually think there may be more business, especially some of the New York airports. So, but we'll keep working with them. But people should know that these types of flights, these types of routes, new routes, tend to be experimental in, mm-hmm, a way. They're pilot, pardon the label, but they're pilot projects,
yes,
right?
Right.
So they are meant to just test things out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one didn't pan out. But you know, as we continue to build out the airport, especially the new tower and the new terminal, I think we're going to be a more attractive place to do more permanent service.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pressing ahead on all that stuff.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have forgotten this. Mayor, you're an economics major. You haven't. But in the old days, not that long ago, the 70s, the 80s, they used to subsidize it. The federal government would buy so many seats on the plane to keep a route going or to start a route.
Well, that sort of thing happens still. I don't think the FAA does that anymore, but a lot of airports do. And so when we've talked to carriers, one of the things they've said to us is, you know, can you guarantee revenue?
Right.
And the answer is, well, we just don't have that kind of dough in New, mm-hmm, Bedford, right? So we need a carrier that can be more self-sustaining, mm-hmm, whose routes can be self-sustaining in the long run, because we don't really have, it's not a large enough airport. It doesn't have enough revenue to actually enter into those kinds of arrangements.
Right.
But larger airports do that.
Yes.
And so it makes it easier. Those kinds of arrangements make it easier for commercial carriers to try out new routes and to see if they stick. So, you know, we will continue to make it a nice airport by improving the infrastructure there. We built both runways. And in the years ahead, we'll do a new entranceway as well. There's a lot of work to be done there. But I think if it's convenient to fly out of New Bedford and affordable, then I think eventually people will start doing more.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, it's like talking about the train. People say, oh, nobody's riding the train. I've had this conversation with a couple of people. I say, well, that's because if you go to Boston on a regular basis, you already have another way to get there. It takes a little while,
yeah,
for new transportation,
yeah,
modes,
I mean,
to get going.
These things, these transportation options are all all different, and sometimes it's hard to generalize. But when it comes to the airport, the theory is behind our strategy that we are in a catchment area that is of significant size, so we don't have. It takes a good 45 to 50 minutes to get to Green Airport. Hyannis is a seasonal airport, and then, you know, forget Logan. That's, I mean, there's a reason why we had a commercial air service to Logan for a little while, and that's because it's far away.
Yes.
So we think that as Eastern Mass continues to develop, there'll be some more. It'll be only growing demand for airport services in New Bedford. So that's the theory. And as we've discussed before, new airports aren't being built anymore.
Right.
In the United States. I mean, there's some rare exceptions, but you need a lot of land. And ordinarily, you have to build in places where there's wetlands or some other complication that makes them cost prohibitive. So, and it takes a long time. So we need to continue to try to make our airport work as best as possible.
We have the mayor of New Bedford here a day early. Mayor, talk about the mayor, convening a pre-K education in Providence, or is there the mayor's arc?
Yeah, so I'm speaking at an event tomorrow in Providence concerning early childhood education, and so there was a conflict with our show, so I didn't think it would be a big deal to switch it to
it's fine to
Tuesday, but the event is to highlight the importance of pre-K. There's a lot of talk around pre-K and childcare these days, and I think sometimes the policy discussions don't quite hit the mark. When we talk about things like universal pre-K, it's really about opening up the possibility for everybody to go, but that doesn't mean everybody has to attend.
Okay.
I think the biggest bang for the public dollar when it comes to addressing the needs of young kids under the age of 5 is to identify and to address learning disabilities. There's there's a growing set of data out there that says, look, if you can catch autism at an early age, if you can catch dyslexia at an early age or other conditions that lead to learning disabilities, you can address them better.
Mm-hmm.
But there are lots of kids out there who aren't identified as having learning disabilities until they arrive at kindergarten, and there's a lot of data that shows that that's kind of too late.
Really?
Yeah. And people just assume that kids are all blank slates and they all come to arrive at kindergarten just the same, and the reality is that that's not the case. And so, you know, I think it is an appropriate use of government funds to try to address these things. And some people might look at some of this stuff cynically and say, well, that's just government stepping into the shoes of parents, and it's not quite that. I don't think it's there's a really important policy goals that can be achieved by investing in that area. The other thing is too, having those options, especially for women, help women in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
It can get really if you don't have available care or learning opportunities for your kids when they're young. And you're a working mother, it is a really a big burden on one's career.
Sure.
So it is an area where I think government funds can be well spent, and so we're going to be talking about that. We do a good job in New Bedford on it. We've really expanded stuff in the last few years. We've gone from there are many providers, of course, of pre-K in the city. There's mm-hmm. some of the child care facilities. There's Head Start. Which PACE does. There's North Star Learning Center, and then of course there's the school system. And you know, we created a early learning center at the former Parker Elementary School on County Street, which handles kids from essentially the center of the city. There are other schools that handle kids from their own neighborhoods, but the idea for all of it is to, again, the focus is really on making sure kids are, if they have any kind of learning disability, to get to address it so they can get ready for kindergarten.
Right.
The idea is kindergarten readiness, which doesn't mean that the kid's going to be doing, you know, non-Euclidean geometry as a 5-year-old, right? But it's really about getting a kid to a point where if the child has, say, dyslexia, that dyslexia is really being addressed well mm-hmm. by the kid, time the kid shows up for kindergarten. That's the idea. So we've done that, and we've done a number of things. We have a new early childhood development program at New Bedford High School, so we can get people into the workforce in that area more readily. You don't need a college degree to be doing a lot of the work, some of the work you do, but some of it not.
Sure.
We also have a network of providers and other stakeholders, if you will, other institutions and people that interact with children or young children who are now working together to understand, okay, we're to help identify kids who may have an issue and, okay. and to get them into the right services. So I think it's promising. We've got a lot to talk about in New Bedford that we've done in New Bedford, and so that's what I'm doing tomorrow.
We have the mayor of New Bedford here a day early. Mayor, it is the reality of the fact that Bruce passed away, Bruce Oliveira, his school committee seat. How will that be filled?
Well, it is the city code calls for not an election, but an appointment by a combined body of the school committee and the city council. Mm-hmm. So a body of, would be six people, right, from the school committee and then 11 counselors, so 17 total. Oddly enough, the only time that's happened while I've been in office was when we appointed Bruce.
Yeah.
Whatever that was, 13 years ago or so. So that will happen at some point, I would think, in the next couple of months. But we'll work with the city council to go through that, process.
Will you wait till after the latest elected people have been seated, so which will be after January 1st, or do you anticipate maybe it'll happen before that?
Well, we'll talk to the city council about it. We haven't picked up that discussion yet because okay. Bruce hasn't even had his services yet. But it's we'll pick up that. That conversation and certainly we welcome anybody who wishes to serve.
Yeah.
To throw their hat in the ring.
Right. Yeah. No, I was just wondering, I agree, it is a little premature, but we're talking about the school stuff and there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah, it's not like the school committee won't have a quorum. It's not like business is going to grind to a halt, right? It is, we can do business with six school committee members. But for the time being, but you know, we obviously would want to fill that slot, and we'll pick up that discussion probably after Thanksgiving.
We're going to take a break here, Mayor, and then we'll come back. Stick around, folks. We have the mayor of New Bedford here a day early, but we're covering a lot of really important ground here. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500. Welcome
back to the program. You're thinking, boy, it's cold outside, and I'm already starting to see some decorations going up. That's because it's pretty close to Christmas time, and Carter's Clothing, where you got to go. For 78 years now, Carter's Clothing has been the South Coast's one-stop shop for clothing and footwear, and this Christmas, they're making gift-giving even easier. Carter's has the best prices on top name brands like Carhartt, Timberland, Chippewa, New Balance, and much, much more. Find something for everyone with over 75 styles of boots, cozy flannels, hoodies, jackets, and vests, perfect for winter. Free parking is available at both locations, downtown New Bedford and Fall River. Gift cards are available in any denomination. Shop small, shop local this Christmas with Carter's Clothing. You can visit Carter's at cartersma.com. Mayor, have you started your Christmas shopping?
Absolutely not, Chris.
But Carter's is always one of your stars.
Giving it a thought.
But you guys, because you know you have Carter's to go to.
I have Carter's. You know what? Last year, my wife Ann bought me a pair of jeans in Carter's, and it didn't fit. And you're reminding me now that I forgot to return them.
It's very easy to return them.
So if the Carter family was listening,
of course they are.
I'm going to go look for the receipt. And your response might be, well, you need to lose a little bit of weight.
Right?
Those jeans will fit.
That should be the response. Hey, fatty, you got to lose.
Wait. Hey, fatty, lose a couple of pounds, will you?
Your wife is much more optimistic than you are.
I guess so, right? Yeah.
So, Mayor. But it is a fun time of year coming up. We just came off
a fun time.
The Halloween.
Who doesn't like Thanksgiving, right?
Right. Halloween rolls right into Thanksgiving, which rolls right into Christmas, then New Year's.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's all good, Chris.
It is good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You enjoyed Halloween?
Just because I don't start shopping and when the leaves start falling doesn't mean I'm not into Christmas. It's just...
You have Carter's.
I'm just not into shopping.
You're not into shopping, but you always know you have Carter's.
I always have Carter's.
Right? Pull right in and shop.
It's a safe harbor.
Right. It is a safe harbor. Mayor, other than Cape Air, any fallout from the closing of the federal government? Do we weather it pretty well, or what do you think?
I think it would have been hard if it lasted longer because the SNAP benefits were effectively eliminated. The state had stepped in to an extent, and the Trump administration was ordered to pay for some of it using the reserve that exists in the Agriculture Department. But we've got 36,000 people in the city who are on food stamps, or on SNAP benefits. And if you talk to folks over at the food pantries, they'll tell you it's rare for them to see lines as long as they were a couple of weeks ago.
They were, right.
People were really sweating it. So no, I think NOAA, we've had some issues with NOAA. I think that didn't help that they were effectively closed off from work. So the city didn't come to, it wasn't catastrophic, but
right.
eventually the fact that that the federal government isn't in business would have caught up to us and every other city.
Yes, yes. And then the other part, Mayor, and you pointed out 30-some-odd thousand people on SNAP benefits. That means a lot of the local produce places, the grocery stores, rely on it, meaning their payroll relies on it. So I was concerned about people losing their jobs, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's when that happens, it reverberates through the economy. We saw signs of that even in the time relatively short, I shouldn't call it short because it was the longest shutdown in U.S. history, but it took a while. You could start to see the ripple effect in our local economy.
Mayor, you've unveiled a city's comprehensive emergency management plan, a blueprint for all city departments that outlines the roles and responsibilities for a range of natural and human-made disasters and emergencies. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, it's just another part of our work in preparing for the unexpected. And it's not to say that we're going to anticipate every conceivable calamity that could hit the city, and we hope that nothing bad happens. But you want to be as ready as possible for things ranging from hurricanes to active shooter events to you name it, large fires, mm-hmm. right? So this plan, and I suggest everybody take a look at it, is meant to convey to the public that we've thought through some of these things, and there's been public input on it along the way, but if people after they read it think suspect that we didn't cover everything, if you think there's something else we should be thinking about,
okay.
I just encourage people to weigh in. So you can see it on the city's website but we have to as a city government, especially in a city where we're vulnerable to a whole lot of stuff that could happen.
Sure.
We want to do everything we can to be ready. So I think Brian Obriga, our emergency management director, for his work on it. He put in a ton of work, and all the department heads that did as well. But again, if people think we're missing something, let us know.
That plan can all be found on the city's website. Mayor, we'll take another quick break and we'll be right back. Remember, if you want to ask the mayor a question, you can. It's 508-996-05. I've seen a couple of people pop up and then drop off. So if you want to call, it's a good time. Stick around. We'll be right back. Mayor's playlist, Hold On Loosely, 38 Special. Mayor, why 38 Special? Is it their hair?
I've been the hair. Or as you pointed out, the judo gi.
The judo gi he's wearing.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Probably the hair.
The hair. It's Kansas-esque.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. That's an impressive mane.
It's
too bad the listeners couldn't watch the videos as we are sitting here in the studio. Yeah.
Maybe someday.
Maybe someday.
Mayor, we'll see you next Wednesday?
I don't know. Let's see. Maybe another Tuesday. Next week. It's Thanksgiving week.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Either way, you'll be here. One way or the other.
Either way, I'll be talking to you. One or the other.
There's
a lot going on. So Thanksgiving football games out there, everybody. We've got that going on, of course. Lots of organizations to volunteer for with Thanksgiving food drives. That's always a good thing to do around the holidays. Good family and friend thing to do. Encourage that. I'll be doing a little bit of that next week, I'll wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving next week when I talk to you. I'll hold back on that one.
That way we know you have to show up, Mayor.
Yes, right? Yeah. He's got to show up to wish everyone a great Thanksgiving, right?
Thanks for coming in, Mayor. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Have a good day tomorrow, folks. I'm going across the street and get all my blood taken out and cleanse and put back in my body. Stick around, and God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. So stick around for Barry coming up right after me. I've seen him a couple times this morning here in the hallways. So stick around. Barry Richard coming up next. Stick around.